to see the hope that comes through in the parents when they say, there is something we can do. Our family doesn't have to live this chaotic tornado behind closed doors and keep it a secret.
Welcome, and thank you for listening to the NextGen Podcast, a conversational series with members from Energen Wealth Partners at UBS. With an understanding of the family dynamics that can accompany multi-generational wealth, we are experienced in working with you and your family to develop a strategic plan to guide your decisions. Our approach helps provide education across generations to help define and support your long-term vision for your wealth.
Welcome to the NextGen Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Vansemaes, Executive Director and Financial Advisor with Intergen Wealth Partners at UBS Financial Services. Our office is located in Dayton, Ohio, and you can reach us at intergen@ubs.com. In today's episode, I'm joined by Shannon Grace, an advanced certified ADHD educator, advocate, consultant, and coach. Shannon's personal journey with ADHD has inspired a mission to help others rewrite the narrative around neurodiversity, especially for individuals and families who have long felt unseen or misunderstood. Shannon brings a passion for growth and a deep understanding of executive functioning, equipping her clients with brain-based strategies and empathetic guidance. Whether speaking on stage or coaching one-on-one, Shannon's authenticity, humor, and hope turn fear and self-doubt into strength, purpose, and lasting transformation. So, Shannon, welcome.
Thank you, Tim. Glad to be here. Very
yes.
happy to be here.
Yes. Well, we're very excited to have you. So I'd love to take a few minutes and kind of learn about your background and how you came to be an ADHD coach. Before we do that, let's talk about ADHD here in the United States a little bit. It seems like the topic has come front center the last few years. I can't tell if that's because it's more prevalent in today's society or just being diagnosed and being talked about more often. Can you help our audience understand what is ADHD, how it's diagnosed, and whether it's on the rise or it's just finally getting the attention it needs?
Oh, wow. Well, first of all, I'm excited to talk about my favorite subject.
Good.
That's a lot, and it's all the above. First, I'm going to hit on the rise. The rise is because we're finally, our society, in my opinion, is acknowledging that there's more than one type of brain. Neurotypical is one type of brain, and neurodiversity is another type of brain. And ADHD is considered a neurodiverse brain. And so in identifying what those neurodiversions look like, it can be anywhere from ADHD at one end of the spectrum to autism on the other end. And then I don't know if you're familiar with what we now are recognizing, which is in the middle of the spectrum, is AADHD. So we're just getting more research of neuroscience about the neuroscience of the neurodivergent brain and what the differences are in the three types of primarily what ADHD is, which is inattentive, hyperactive, and coactive, and what that looks like in children and adults, male, female. And just recently, in the past decade, us females that are ADHD, that's on a rise of a diagnosis in females because females are more dreamers if they're more on the inattentive side and didn't get a diagnosis when they were younger because we were compared to an hyperactive 8-year-old boy. So neuroscience has come to acknowledge that ADHD looks different in teenage girls, menopausal women, pregnant women, compared to an hyperactive boy. So there's been a lot of new neuroscience in not only neurodiversity itself, but what it looks like in all ages of life. And there was a myth that, you know, ADHD, you outgrow it. It's not true. That is a myth. So we've come a long way in 2026 since you and I were in high school in what that looks like specifically in ADHD, in autism, and in all ADHDers. And all ADHDers are ADHDers that have some symptoms of autism in the brain.
So a lot of the things that you talked about was it's being diagnosed more. So can you talk a little bit about what the process is to get properly diagnosed?
Yeah. So just some research on that ADHD prevalence in children. There's about 6.1 million children in the United States between the ages of 2 to 17 that are estimated being diagnosed with ADHD. And then also with adult diagnoses rising, the diagnosis among adults are growing almost four times faster.
Wow.
Than ADHD diagnoses among children in the United States.
Wow.
And that was from a statistic done in 2024 by the CHAD organization, who actually gets their results from the APSARD. So it is on a rise, especially in adults, because of the new neuroscience. But what ADHD is, underdevelopment in the prefrontal cortex, which is right behind your forehead, and it's a neural underdevelopment between 3 to 5 years. So if your child is 16, the underdevelopment in the prefrontal cortex in that area of his or her brain is 3 to 5 years underdeveloped in what we call executive functions. ADHD has nothing to do with intellect, and we are not crazy. We are not lazy. We are stupid or stupid. We're not crazy, lazy, or stupid. And a lot of ADHDers, because of the underdevelopment of that brain, have an awareness of that they are those things, right? So neuroscience is saying that's not true, but they're feeling that way because the brain is underdeveloped and impaired in 6 to 8 areas. And one of those areas is task initiation, getting started, organizing, prioritizing, not knowing where to start, focusing and sustaining that focus and being able to shift from task to task. Also, kind of regulating alertness, right? And sustaining effort, impulse control, emotional regulation, planning and prioritizing, time management, not being able to see the future. ADHDers, we kind of live in the here and the now, and we can't see anything beyond that. Also, we have issues with short-term memory. We're great at long-term memory, but our short-term memory is not fully developed there. So with all of these struggles, you know, we tend to have more of a negative self-esteem issue towards ourselves, which can be detrimental in the long run if this is not diagnosed and then getting the appropriate help to develop that underdevelopment part of the brain for our children.
Wow. Well, why don't we take a step back? And I'd like, if you're open to it, I'd love for you to share with our listeners a little bit about your journey specifically, because I think it's inspiring to me. And maybe take us back to your childhood and talk a little bit about your own journey.
Well, oh gosh, I don't even know where to begin. Well, as a 54-year-old menopausal ADHD woman, it's tough to think about my past. Yet I know today that my past is the purpose of my tomorrows and why I'm here doing what I'm doing. I hate to admit this, but yet it is what it is, and it's part of my purpose, but I barely graduated from high school. I got a 2 point something, I don't even remember, but I say that I barely graduated because that 2 point whatever I graduated with, I did not get on my own. I became an expert, master, if you will, at cheating. Cheating because, again, my brain was underdeveloped and I didn't know what was going on. I couldn't remember. I was a horrible test taker. But because I was able to sustain my ADHD during class time and during school, I looked like a good student. But at home, things were not at all what you would think. I come from a very good Christian family. My dad's a pastor. And when I got home, it became violent because I did not feel good about what I did during the day at school. I could barely read and comprehend. I had major anxiety and panic attacks when I got home, when I had to write papers, to the point that I would punch holes in the walls. I became extremely moody and violent because I didn't know what to do with all this anxiety that was coming up because I couldn't do what was expected of me. But everybody saw something different. I excelled in sports, but yet when I came home and had to do schoolwork, I couldn't do it. And it got to the point to where my dad did my schoolwork. My dad wrote my papers. I couldn't even do an outline, and I'm a senior in high school. So my self-esteem just plummeted. I will tell you this, that I can recall in my younger years, we grew up in Kentucky and lived on a farm. And I do remember in probably second or third grade, my mom being called in to Miss Montgomery's class and was told, you know, hey, I think Shannon has some difficulty reading and comprehending. And my mom kind of just was like, okay, thanks for the information. Meanwhile, I'm going, that's true. That's true. This feels right. This feels right. Somebody finally sees me. And then nothing was done about it. So I continued struggling. And then it just became worse in high school. I was a horrible, horrible teenager. I acted out. I got violent. I had major anger issues because I could not regulate. So part of having ADHD is that impulsiveness, not being able to self-regulate. And it can become violent in some kids. And I was one of those kids that it became violent only because I didn't know how to articulate what was going on inside my body. I didn't know what was wrong with me, and I didn't know how to fix it. So my grades were kind of, you know, up and down, and my parents really thought that I was being lazy, and I just didn't want to do it. But it wasn't the fact that I didn't want to do it. Kids want to do well. They want to do well in school. They want to do well in home. They don't want to disappoint their parents. But my parents took it that way, in that I was being lazy, and I wasn't. I really wasn't. I just could not focus, and I couldn't learn and retain the information.
Well, and back then, ADHD wasn't front center the way it is in society now, right?
Correct.
They
Correct.
May have done differently if they'd known.
Absolutely. And that's part of one of my biggest advocacies is teaching parents. That's one of the main focuses of my business is family foundation. So I have an advanced certification in ADHD family foundations and teaching the parents how to coach differently to their neurodiverse child than they do their neurotypical child. And due to some of this anger issues, because I couldn't perform, not knowing that my brain was underdeveloped 3 to 5 years, my sister, I have a younger sister, siblings take on a lot of trauma based on the ADHD child in the household. So it not only affects the parents and the child with ADHD, but it also affects the siblings. And also, so what my parents did was constantly grounded me or punished me and disciplined me, which was great, but it became so severe that it backfired. It grew the aggravation and anger inside of me even more. You know, I recall my parents grounding me because of my grades and then made me pay for my own tutor. And that tutor ended up giving up on me because nothing was changing. And that's when I just started giving up on life. I had suicidal thoughts and tendencies. I did not follow through with it at 15, but I did have those thoughts and went to take action, but then thought about my parents finding me, and specifically my dad, because my dad has ADHD undiagnosed, but it is genetic. 95% of adults are getting diagnosed with ADHD after their child right now. So once the child gets diagnosed and the parents start learning about it, they're going, oh, that's sounding like me. And I will tell you, 9 times out of 10, as a ADHD parent coach and coach of individuals within the family, I'm seeing it. 9 times out of 10, my clients' parents are getting diagnosed after the child. So after high school, I tried to go to college. I only got into college because I got a partial scholarship and because of who my dad was, but I was put on probation. I lasted a year, but I barely got through that year. Major panic attacks, stomach issues, anxiety. Oh, I was an expert cheater with my dorm sisters. So, but I was struggling again. But the anxiety got worse. The sicknesses got worse. My body was failing me. But I made it through my first year. And then I tried to go back 4 more times at 4 different colleges and didn't succeed until I finally got diagnosed. And I got diagnosed from my mother, who was going back to school to get her doctorate degree in psychology. Yes.
And so it was at that point she must have heard something. Was it a light bulb moment for your family and you?
You would think. For me, it was.
Yeah.
For
yeah.
me, it was. But so my mother gave me the multiple choice test. Mm-hmm. And what happened was I asked for it because I had just recently returned home from competing in the Miss USA pageant. Mm-hmm. And the first runner up, Miss Tennessee, was very vocal on stage about her ADHD, and it just stuck with me and never left me, to the point I went into a major depression when I came home for almost 6 months, didn't come out. But my mom said, hey, why don't we just, I'm learning about it this week in my doctorate degree. Why don't I give you the test? So at that time when I was 27, which was 1998, 99, she gave me the test, and it was a multiple choice. And it was the first 100% I'd ever gotten on a test in my life.
Yeah.
So it was pretty emotional for me and shocking at the same time. Yet my mom didn't do anything about it. It was almost kind of dismissed. And from what I know now in my personal experience in working with parents and teaching them, parents take that on personally, like as if it's something that they did. And I believe, I'm sure my mom felt the same way. So I want parents to know, if you're a parent out there with that has an ADHD child, it's not anything you did do, and it's nothing you didn't do. This is a formality of the brain growth, and it's nothing you could do anything about. But now you can. And learn about your child's brain. Figure out where it is. Get a neuropsych eval and get a true diagnosis from a doctor who understands ADHD and understands the 3 or 4 or 5 things that have to be done in the diagnosis within the neuropsych eval for your child to know where those percentages of those executive functions are activating or not activating, which is so important. And I'm a firm believer that it's up to a family to decide whether they get on medication or not. Dr. Hollowell talks about ADHD brains are like Ferraris, and they're Ferraris with bicycle brakes. It's the best way to explain an ADHD brain.
Interesting. Yeah.
Right. So I like to tell that story and then say, I'm the brake specialist. I take the neuropsyche valve, I put it in human terms. After a doctor has done the diagnosis, I read the diagnosis, look where the executive functions are landing and high or low. And then I put the skills together based on the neuropsyche valve of those executive functions. And I teach the skills to how to build the underdevelopment of the brain.
Well, we'll talk a little bit more about your process, but so let's just stay on track for a sec. So when you talked about getting that diagnosis, what happened then?
That's what happened.
Yeah.
Validation.
Mm-hmm.
The validation of a neuropsyche valve is the first step in healing a child and an adult.
Mm-hmm.
Because it says, oh, I'm not crazy, lazy, or stupid, right? There is something wrong, and I can do something about it, right? So what happened to me was life-changing. I was dating somebody at the time who said, yes, your mom didn't do anything about it, but you're 27 years old. You're an adult. You can make a decision to do whatever you want. But when you're stuck in your head and you have ADHD, we don't think outside the box. We're so stuck in this default negative brain wiring that we don't think outside of it. And we need people to help us with our inhibition issues to be self-reflective and to be self-aware of ourselves, because we're just so stuck in the negative because of all the beliefs and limited beliefs we believe of ourselves, and which really is the core of self-esteem that we ADHDers do struggle with and affects our quality of life. So I did end up going to a doctor who actually put me on, I think I tried Concerta first, and then I tried Ritalin and Adderall. But what I did is I ended up getting on medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about 3 months, 6 months later, once I saw the astronomical effects it had on me in a way that just ignited my brain for such positivity and belief that I could actually start something and follow through and finish it and sustain focus and regulate my nervous system. It was almost as if a new world opened up in my life.
Wow.
And what I did, thanks to the encouragement of the gentleman I was dating at the time, he encouraged me to try college again. And I did, and I went back and I put myself back through college at CMU and finished with a public administration leadership communication degree at 34.
Wow.
So I
go Chippewas.
That. Yeah, go Chips. So what happened was then at 45, and I was married at the time, at 45, I was going through 5 years prior at 40, I had an emergency hysterectomy.
Mm-hmm.
And could not have kids. And I'm going to pause my story right there because I want to tell your listeners that the reason why I could not have kids was because the toxic issues that happen in the body based on an underdevelopment brain in females is that they can get what is called PMDD, and their menstrual cycles are severe. And that severity over time can lead to endometriosis. And I did not know that that was actually a thing. This is a new part of research in neuroscience with women. So, and I was one of those kids to the point that I would pass out in high school due to my menstrual cycle, and my mom would have to come and get me. The pain was unbearable. So that's called PMDD, but it can lead to girls not having children. So mm-hmm. I could not have children due to that, because once I was opened up, there was just so much complications in my body that I ended up having an emergency hysterectomy, which led me into menopause. So 45, hitting menopause, I think I'm crazy again, right? So I end up reading a book that changed my life by Dr. Kathleen Nadeau. And my husband at the time and I went on vacation, and I read that book from front to back and had pretty much a nervous breakdown on that vacation. But that vacation changed my life.
Shanna, what was the name of the book? Do you remember?
I don't remember.
Okay, the author was?
Kathleen Nadeau, Dr. Kathleen Nadeau. She is one of my idols and I look up to her. She's written many books, but this book was back in the 90s that I had purchased about being on meds and trying to get pregnant. But I read it from front to back, not just the one chapter, as us ADHDers tend to do, is just read chapters. We just read the chapters for the moment in time that we're dealing with in life. We don't read front to back. But it changed my life. And I found a doctor here locally in the Michigan area that's up in the U of M Ann Arbor area. And I was re-diagnosed at 45, and it was a 38-page neuropsyche valve was the results that even gave me more insight on what it looked like in my brain. And it was more detailed than the multiple choice that was given almost 20 years prior, right, from my mom. So that's just the evolution of neuroscience. It was life-changing. And that doctor, after seeing her for quite some time, about a year, I was like, okay, I can't come up here drive an hour and come up here every week. And so she referred me to somebody locally. And before I left, she said, you know, I think you would make an excellent ADHD coach. Well, I had a panic attack in her office because I was like, I'm not going back to school. Oh my gosh, I'm not going back to school. And she said, no, it's not like that. It's not like that. She said, how about you try it out for 6 months? And so I did. Well, 3.5 years later, I graduated from that full extended program, which is ADCA, and it's a training program specifically for neurodiversity in regards to just ADHD on the spectrum. An ADHD coach, a certified ADHD coach, is an executive function specialist. But we say ADHD coach because a lot of people don't know what executive function specialist is. So we only work with ADHDers in the skill building of teaching the skills of what their executive functions are underdeveloped in, and we teach parents. So I ended up going back to school for another 3.5 years because I just want people to know that there is healing. It doesn't go away, but quality of life can be something you never ever dreamed up. I'm living it. I'm experiencing it. I'm watching lives change now as an ADHD executive function coach. And I just feel so blessed to be able to walk people through this transformation and to see the hope that comes through in the parents when they say, there is something we can do. Our family doesn't have to live this chaotic tornado behind closed doors and keep it a secret. You don't have to, but you do have to learn how your child's brain is wired, and you cannot parent a neurodiverse child the same way you do a neurotypical. And you have to go back to school a little bit and understand these kids because they're doing things not to irritate you. They're doing things, they don't want to be lazy, but they have a deficiency in the underdevelopment of the neurobiology of their brain. It is not something they control. They want to. They can't do something if their brain is not motivated. And their brain has a motivation problem. They can't do something. They need help motivating. And every brain is different depending on what the neuropsyche valve says. So just because one child's ADHD looks this way, another child looks this way. And not only that, is when you get an ADHD diagnosis, it comes with other comorbidities. So I will use mine. And my ADHD comorbidities comes with depression, anxiety. Those are the top two comorbidities. So if you have a child that has high anxiety or high depression, or you're an adult that has high anxiety and high depression, there's a high probability that you might have ADHD. There are other things that you have to look at, but And then I also have SADS, which is seasonal affect disorder that affects your body physically. And so there's many different comorbidities that go with ADHD. So just know that you're not just going to have ADHD. There's other things that are going to come out, but it doesn't mean life is going to end.
Right.
Actually, it's not going to end. It's the new beginning of life, and
Right.
a life you never even thought that you could imagine for yourself, no matter what age you are when you get your diagnosis. I want to say that again. No matter what age you are when you get a diagnosis, I've seen 70 and 80-year-old women get a diagnosis and enjoy life like they never have before.
Interesting.
So yeah, I probably went all over the place, but that's what ADHDers do.
No, that's all really good. I mean,
Our passion takes over, and we're very passionate people. And if I may take a minute to just describe what the difference of a neurotypical brain versus a neurodiverse brain looks like is a neurotypical brain is more logic, and an ADHD brain is more emotional and sensitive for so many reasons. A neurotypical brain is definitely more organized, it's focused, it's regulated, it's coordinated, it's cooperative. It has that typical development, right? It's flexible, it can prioritize, it's more aware, and it's more patient. An ADHD brain is hyper-focused, distracted, it's extremely lovable. And I tell people that it's extremely lovable because it's very sensitive. And that sensitivity is felt in the body physically. And that can mean high sensitivity to noise, lights. So that's why kids get irritable. I get really irritable when I'm watching a movie and someone is chomping on popcorn. It drives me through the roof and I can feel it in my body. It's like porcupine. So, with that note, also restless legs, it's like a restless feeling, right? But ADHDers are highly creative. Highly. You want ADHDers at your job because they're amazing creative problem solvers. And our intuition on people is innate. It is on such a high level that we can't even explain it ourselves. And sometimes it's scary. Like, we don't know why we feel this way towards people. We don't have any facts, but it's just a feeling. And you want to learn to trust that feeling because one of the superpowers of having ADHD is that intuition and perseverance and tenacity. But ADHDers are unorganized. They are unorganized. We have a hard time seeing the future and planning for the future. So we need help in that area. But what I can tell you is this: with the right support systems and learning how to change your habits in your life can be life-changing.
Sure.
I'm walking through it. I've been through it. And now I'm helping other people do it because I got that same support. And my quality of life, it looks different than it did 7 years ago. And so can other people's. But I think it's so important that parents understand that your children wanna do well, but they can't. They can't because their brain is underdeveloped 3 to 5 years. And teachers and school administration are not responsible for being able to take care of this by themselves. They need the parents' help. Go help your school system and teachers and administration by getting a diagnosis and looking where those executive functions are. Find an ADHD coach that can help you get your child 504 accommodations or IEP plan accommodations. Learn how to work with the school, not against the school. These teachers and administrations can only do so much with massive amounts of kids in their room. And I want teachers and administrations out there to know that us ADHD executive function coaches want to come in and help your families know that we're out there to support them. And we understand this brain, and they don't have to take this on themselves. And that is where my heart is, because I know what it's like with lived experiences. I went back and got a certification, a 3.5 year certification. And I just want to help parents and families and administration and HR to know that this is real.
So when you were talking about the years that you were in school and how you didn't know what was going on with your body and your parents didn't either. So how do you, as a parent, what kind of signs should you look for that would differentiate between, you know, hey, my son's just really active and bubbly and alive versus, you know, he potentially has ADHD? Or how do you differentiate, you know, what are some of the signs you should look for?
Oh, gosh, restlessness. Well, okay, so I'm going to go back to this. If they're inattentive, I'm going to go back to the three pillars of ADHD.
Okay.
It's inattentive, hyperactive, and coactive.
Okay.
So inattentive is what you and I used to know as ADD. ADD is no longer ADD. It's ADHD with three pillars: inattentive, hyperactive, and coactive. So inattentives are more dreamers. They're more lazy-daisical, if you will. They dream big, but then when they go to acquire their dreams, they fail all the time. And then they get aggravated and they get moody. You see more daydreamers in females than you do males. And then the hyperactivity, of course, you can recognize that, but it's the hyperactivity that they can't focus, right? And across the board, people lose things all the time. Believe your children when they say that they don't remember, but it's over time. Like, you're seeing all these executive function issues, such as getting started. They have a hard time starting a task, or they're just sitting there and they can't do their homework or their work. They're too exhausted. It physically drains the body. So that's an issue. Are they tired all the time? And then they can't. That's that lazy identification. Let me see. They're up and they're down as far as their moods. What else? They can't complete tasks. So if you're seeing these patterns over and over and over again, that's when I would be aware. And I tell parents, start writing these things down and journaling them on the day and what time you're seeing these patterns happen. Because that's important that you bring those things to a coach. It informs them more about what's happening in the home and if you should or should not seek out a diagnosis or not. Another thing is, are they participating in high risk friendships, high risk addiction behaviors? Because addiction and ADHDers go hand in hand. Those addicted have ADHD. So as you know, my family runs Grace Centers of Hope, which is Oakland County's largest and homeless shelter. And I'm back working there again. And I'm working in the development department. But what people are learning and asking me that are working there who have been through our programs many years ago is like, I think I have ADHD. And I'm like, well, that makes sense. If you're recovering, it makes sense. You know, what did you struggle with? And so then I'll bring them, you know, little brochures or something. And I end up talking about ADHD a lot at work. And you can just see them go, oh, that's why I did that. There's other things, but that's why I had toxic behavior. And a lot of that toxic behavior is to get rid of that negative feeling due to not being aware that their brain is underdeveloped 3 to 5 years. So I'm telling parents, really be aware of your kids and get them diagnosed or not diagnosed, but get them help sooner than later, because you are building their self-esteem in the long run as an adult. Because a lot of adults deal with what we call rejection sensitivity disorder. And we're rejecting ourselves because we didn't know what we didn't know about our brain, and we never got the help. So, and I'm one of those people, but I'm just learning more and more about rejection sensitivity disorder. And Dr. William Dotson is a phenomenal doctor out of Colorado who is specifically working on and studying this rejection sensitivity within the ADHD brain. So I highly recommend anybody that is relating to this RSD to read his books and learn about, you know, why you're feeling this way, because it is something. And I want you to feel validated to how you feel. And that's the main thing about healing with ADHD, is validating that these children, these teenagers, these college kids, and us adults who have been diagnosed, it's real. Your feelings are real.
Mm-hmm.
Your experience are real. And we see you now.
Yeah. So one of the things that you talked a little bit about, the first corner that you really started to turn, was when you got diagnosed and you got on meds.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about the role of meds in treating ADHD? I know you probably can't get into specifics, but
right.
broadly speaking.
Yeah. So I'm not a doctor. I need to put that out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I also want to say this too, before we go into meds. I am a advanced certified ADHD executive function coach. Now, the coaching careers are regulated, but they're not regulated like a licensed therapist.
Well, and I'm going to ask you all about that.
Okay. All
yeah,
right.
Because there's a lot of Facebook fraudsters out there. So we'll get to that. But
yeah.
Talk a little bit about the role of meds, you know, kind of side by side with coaching.
Yeah. So what the meds do is that ignites the brain. So the brain, an ADHD brain, lacks dopamine and serotonin. So not only is our brain 3 to 5 years underdeveloped, we do not produce enough dopamine and serotonin. So if you see your kids like becoming and acting out in a negative way because you're pulling them away from their video, well, they're getting that dopamine fix that they're not used to feeling. And that's why ADHDers are risk takers. That dopamine, when they're doing something that they love, their brain is wired in all cylinders, and so is their body. They finally feel good, right? So the dopamine and then the serotonin helps, it kind of calms the moods and helps us regulate. We don't produce enough of that. So one of the things I definitely look for is your child addicted to their phone? That is a sign because they can't do their homework. It's not because they don't want to do their homework. They want to do it. They want to complete it and feel good about themselves. But this dopamine is like an addiction in this phone or games. But what the medicine does, it ignites and produces the feel good and the regulation that we lack as ADHDers. So, but it's a personal decision. I've been on, I've been off, and now I know enough to regulate my own. So it is a personal decision, and that's about all I can go into.
Yeah.
Other than medication wires the brain to take those steps needed to start believing in themselves, to build that self-esteem. And then once you learn more about your brain and ADHD meds and how to regulate that, things get better. Like I know how, sometimes I don't take it, sometimes I do, but that brain changes, so is the medication. And what I want people to know is this: there are over 40 medications for ADHD. And in my opinion, in researching this Adderall shortage, because of the evolution of neuroscience and ADHD, doctors, practitioners used to be able to ask 3 questions. And if you answered those questions, you got a diagnosis.
Mm.
Well, anybody can go in and go, yes, no, yes, no, if you're told the right answers to get the medication. So that's, kids were going in, college kids are going in, and mom's going in to get that jolt of Adderall, or Ritalin to feel better, but it in a neurotypical, the medications are like cocaine. But in an ADHDer's brain, it is not. It's actually wiring the brain to come up to a neurotypical's level, if you will. And a lot of kids don't like the way that it feels because they don't even know what it feels like to be at this level and working as a neurotypical. But so ADHD meds to a neurotypical is like cocaine. But to an ADHDer, it's finally feeling normal. And I'm saying that from a lived experience and being an experienced ADHD coach and watching, it's scary. They don't like how they feel because what their norm is not really the norm, and they don't like how I feel. And they're learning that word. I don't like how the meds make me feel. So then the kids stop taking it. But that needs to be challenged with a child and an ADHD coach, not a parent, because the ADHD child will most likely buck the parent. They need somebody, because what the child says is, you don't have any clue what I'm going through. And I don't either, but I know how I feel. You don't. And what truly resonates with the kid, and I can tell you this, I've had young adults who have finally, after years of their parents seeking me out, will finally come to me because I'll pick up the phone and call them and say, "What's up, dude? Hi, I'm Shannon. I have ADHD too." And then hearing my story is the bridge to a child getting help, because they believe no one's out there and they're keeping this a secret, so much so that it truly is affecting their health and their self-esteem at the core of who they are. They're losing their dignity and integrity for themselves when they should be building it. And that's my differentiation in my coaching. And that's kind of my why, is I don't want these kids to go through the years and years of not knowing who you are, in your strengths and who God made you, and just thinking that you can do nothing and you're not, why are you even here? You're not worth anything. And that other development of that brain is what kids feel like when they can't produce what the schools are asking them to do. And it's truly something that is real, and they're not doing it because they're making people mad or they don't want to do it. Kids want to do help. And that is a Dr. Ross Green. I'm quoting Dr. Ross Green. And you parents who are listening to this, I want you to watch YouTube videos of Dr. Ross Green. And they're old, but they're so apparently prominent to you, in that he explains kids want to do well, but they can't. And it's up to parents to learn about this brain and learn what it looks like to set up success for your child at home first. So then your child can work with an ADHD coach and come into this new environment that parents have built, that this child's nervous system can regulate. And the brain doesn't go into PTSD, fight, flight, freeze, or fawning, because an ADHD brain that can't do something stays in PTSD mode, which is fight, flight, freeze, or fawning. Are you familiar with what fawning is? It's the new F. So fawning is a PTSD mode that resonates with ADHDers, because we are empaths. And we're constantly pleasing, because when we please, we feel better about ourselves and we're not bad people. So we get in this fight, flight, freeze, or fawning, and we please people because it makes us feel better. But what happens is we lose ourselves even more. We become very vulnerable to narcissistic friendships, narcissistic relationships and marriages. So it's so important to build the self-esteem of your child.
So So one of the things that we talked about a minute or two ago is what credentials and things should parents or adult ADHDers look for in a coach? I mentioned, you know, seeing things in a Facebook feed with all kinds of online this and that. But could you talk a little bit about your training, the credentials? What should people look for in a quality ADHD executive function coach?
So the coaching environment is not regulated yet, but it's getting there. So the ICF coaching, the International Coaching Federation, is regulating coaches, any kind of coaching. So I am an ACC coach, but my ACCG is my advanced certification within ADHD and executive function. So I have two certifications. Right now, anybody can be an ADHD coach. And there are a lot of ADHD coaches out there that do not have the correct training. And that is detrimental for you getting help with somebody who does not have certification, because they're coaching based on their own lived experiences and not understanding of the brain and a neurodiverse brain specifically, and how it shows, ADHD shows up in the executive functions and under development in reading a neuropsyche valve. So trained neurodiverse ADHD executive function coaches, they cannot talk about meds, or they can't tell you what meds to be on, only a doctor can, and we cannot be the first person to interpret a neuropsyche valve. But what we do is we take a neuropsyche valve and we look at the executive functions that are under development in the brain. That's why every ADHDer's brain looks different. And then we build the skills with these executive functions based on what the individual's situational variables of life look like. So what are they struggling with most? Right? And we build those skills. We retrain the habits. And while we're doing that is we're also pouring into facts and neuroscience to disintegrate the old beliefs of the old self-esteem of the person that was stuck in this. I'm not good at this, or I'm not good at that. Yes, you are. But we've got to learn different skills. So neurodiverse people have been trying to live in a neurotypical world and keep running into this brick wall. Well, their brains are wired differently. They have to do things differently. They have to be taught how to do things and live life differently than a neurotypical. And you are worthy. You can heal and you can have a quality of life that is unlike anything you ever imagined. You can have successful relationships. You can sustain a job. One of the things that we look at in ADHD adults is, are you job hopping? That's one of the big things. What do your relationships look like? Where are you getting stuck in your job? And where do you need support? So just like kids get support at school with a 504 or an IEP plan, which is legal, adults can get those same accommodations at work, and they don't know that. But there's a big gap in, do we tell our employer or not? Because this old stigma is still out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what pains me so much about our corporate America and not accepting individuals that have neurodiverse brain. Well, I'm going to tell you, it's because you don't know how to work with it. They could be some of your best employees if you learn how to work with these neurodiverse brains. We are the most creative people you'll ever meet. We'll solve your problems before you can, like that. And not only that, our superpower is tenacity, perseverance, and we can read people like a book. And it's just who we are, and that's our brain wiring. We're more emotionally driven. We can see things that other people can't. We feel things, and that's an asset to your company. But you have to learn, just like parents, how to work with that. So,
well, and that just goes back to the importance of coaching, right?
Right.
And finding a credentialed coach, not just someone that, you know, you can subscribe to on Facebook.
Yeah, and don't always trust AI. Yeah. So just be very, very careful of what you're watching out there on Facebook and Instagram and TikTok. Make sure they are saying that they are a certified ACC, PCC, MCC coach, or that's with the ICF, and or they are certified by an ICF accredited certification school like ADCA that I went to in New York. It's imperative because if you get with the wrong person, it can be toxic and
Well,
very
not to mention a
detrimental to your
waste of
child
time and money.
and a waste of time and money for sure.
So, Shannon, as we're kind of coming to the end of our time today, for people that are interested in you and engaging with you directly, do you have a website? Do you have a LinkedIn? Tell us how people would find you.
So I do have a website. It's shannongraceconsulting.com. They can find me there. I do have a LinkedIn page. You can find me on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram at Shannon Grace ADHD Consulting.
So any last, parting thoughts, messages of hope for families and those that are dealing with ADHD?
Call me or call a certified coach. Get help. It's not anything to be ashamed of. There is hope in neuroplasticity, which is the rewiring of your brain. There are ways to help yourself as a parent, as a child, as a coworker, as a manager, as a boss. Get help from a certified ADHD coach so you can help the person get out of the chaos, out of their head, and live the best quality of life because the best quality of life is the greatest gift you can give somebody. So get connected to a certified coach, whether it's myself or somebody else, and start what's possible. And that's healing. And it is possible because I'm living it and
Love
I'm
it.
living a life I never thought would be
Love
possible.
it. Love it. Well,
Thank you.
thank you so much for being here, Shannon, and sharing your story with vulnerability and strength. Your work's a gift to anybody who's ever felt different, misunderstood, or in search of their own strengths. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us. If you or someone you know is navigating ADHD, I'd recommend connecting with Shannon Grace. Until next time, take care of yourselves and each other.
Thanks, Tim.
You got it.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Next Gen Podcast. To learn more about our team and to join our exclusive educational events throughout the year, check out our website at advisors.ubs.com/Energen. If you have any suggestions on episodes you'd like to hear, let us know by emailing us at energen@ubs.com. And if you liked this episode, be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify to hear more. This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of any offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we recommend listeners to obtain appropriate and independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services Incorporated offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct our business and that you carefully read agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products and services we offer. For more information, please review Client Relationship Summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services Incorporated is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.
This podcast was edited by Resonate Recordings.